Welcome to Journeys of Romance. I'm your host, Jess Michaels. Today's guest is an award-winning author. She's a former journalist and she's also an editor. Please welcome Shelley Ellis.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited that you're here. You keep every single time that we have this conversation, you're like, I'm not really a romance author though, but I feel like you are. Like, I feel like I see you in Romance Landia. Like, I know some of your books are romances. So, I don't know. I mean, like, obviously, you know, like, you're like, lady, it's my career. I know what I am and what I'm not. I mean, I sort of feel like at least you sideways belong to Romance Landia.
Oh, and yeah. And I also have a great respect for the genre, and I think the storytelling that can go into romance could greatly enhance other genres if people paid attention more to the craft. So, no, yeah, definitely. I started in romance and shifted to other genres like women's fiction and mystery thriller, historical fiction. But at my core, I consider myself fundamentally, I started as a romance writer. And if you read my stories, you can definitely see it, to the point that sometimes people will call them romances, and because I know the rules of romance, I'm like, well, technically it's not,
right?
It doesn't have,
please don't yell at me, it's not my fault, I've never said
exactly. I was like, it doesn't have the happily ever after, that's not resolved at the end, so it doesn't really fall into the genre. But yes, it has strong romantic elements is how I try to put it.
And it's really true, I think, what you say. I mean, it's a shame that there are so many people that sort of say, oh, romance, and then whatever the dismissive comment is next, you know, that comes after that. And the writers who do that are really missing out on the fact that writing a relationship is hard.
Oh yeah. And most of the time they don't even call it romance. It's nice if they even call it that. Lot of times they'll refer to it as like smut books or
mommy
exactly
all of it's sort of you know, just kind of disrespectful. You know, I mean, it's one thing like if we're like, oh, it's smutty, like, and it's us saying it,
yeah,
like, someone else is like, it's smut, we're all like, hey buddy.
Well, and you know what they mean when they're when they're saying it.
I mean, it's hard. And when you look at like that what's that award, I hesitate to call it an award, every year where it's like the worst love scene in a book, like sex scene, and you read it and you're like, this is painful, like that is hard. It's hard to write.
And even like sex scenes or the development of a relationship, I think in other books that don't really have any interaction with romance, is that it can, it's insta-love, but it's insta-love that doesn't make sense. Or it's like raising the stakes, but you don't know. It's like, so why are these people that invested in each other? So they took all these shortcuts because they wanted to have this dynamic in the story and have this romantic couple and add the tension, but you didn't add the tension. So then the reader doesn't really understand, like, okay, so why are the characters behaving like this? Yes, you keep saying they're in love with each other, but I never saw it.
It's like a cardboard, one-dimensional love.
Exactly.
And you never have, I think the other thing that we in the genre tend to be pretty good at is also like having, you have like tension.
Yeah.
You drop out into this quiet moment where they just connect, and that's the places where you build. You know, I mean, yes, of course you build intention, but I mean, the moment where it's like, I really like pancakes and the guy makes her pancakes, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and then all of a sudden they're just having like that kind of brief real moment, and then it's back to the tension. I think that's a big place where people really connect with those characters. And so you either have, they're building tension, but you don't understand why. And the reason you don't understand why is because you never have that moment where they're really connecting.
Yeah. And I completely agree. And that's when I read other books that it's obvious that they haven't read romance at all. I see it. It yanks me out of the story because I'm like, it doesn't feel natural. It feels ham-fisted. And if you care that much about the craft, I think you should care about all aspects of the craft. If you're caring about the turn of a sentence, you should also care about the momentum of the story. And if you're having couples, that momentum is very important to the storytelling. So to just discount it because it's a relationship, I think it's a discredit to you as a writer. I was like, you should be invested in every aspect of your story, and the relationship between the characters is part of that.
when you eliminate such a huge part of what our humanity is, which is wanting to, you know, be with other people and be connected to other people and to be loved and to, you know, be able to express love. Mm-hmm. And that comes in a whole lot of different, you know, ways that that happens. It isn't always like super, super sexy or, you know, I mean that, that all these different kinds of love exist, but like that concept of that we want to be with each other on mm-hmm. some level, even when we hate it, even when we're not people, we're like, no, not people, but I like that one person.
Yeah.
They seem fine. I don't mind them being around.
Yeah.
You know, I mean that when you strip that out and don't give it justice, like you're stripping out such a huge part of what drives us. I mean, you've seen it in the pandemic this year. So many people are like, you know, I was kind of forced to be alone and mm-hmm. it didn't feel healthy to me to just not be able to ever touch another person or be near another person is something that I think, you know, we sort of take for granted and romance doesn't take it for granted.
Yeah.
I think you're kind of, do you think it's sometimes kind of a POV problem too? Because so many romances have both perspectives of multiple characters. The two, you know, whatever the two main leads are, if they're more than two main leads, it's usually all of the leads have a point of view.
Yeah.
And sometimes in literary fiction, which is usually the place where they're like, oh, boo, oh, romance sucks. Then it's often in one point of view, or it's in this sort of disconnected narrative point of view. And so you're maybe not feeling, the development doesn't happen on both sides. So it's like because it's not satisfying to me, and I know there's people that do it really, really well, where it's only one point of view character, even in a romance. Mm-hmm. But I never feel satisfied if I can't tell what the other person is thinking.
Yeah. Well, I think some ways it is and some ways it isn't. Because I have seen like love stories told for the perspective of the person longing. Solely yeah. from their perspective, and actually they have been good stories, but yeah. I do think the difference is that romance is very character driven,
yeah,
and literary fiction is very theme driven. So the characters are there to reinforce the theme, so they're kind of like, if the writer is trying to say something like a big thought about humanity or poverty, the characters are there to reflect that. So they're not really giving a lot of attention to, and sometimes even a literary fiction, stuff will happen that makes absolutely no sense. But you're like, oh, I get what you're trying to say. But but for me, it's still like, I still need my characters to behave in a way, in some instances, that reflects what the human experience is. Especially if you're trying to talk about themes of love or motherhood or loss, to just have these characters be cookie cutters to reinforce this theme, but you didn't give any attention to the relationships that the characters are having to other characters in the story, it pulls, at least for me as a reader, it pulls me out of it. And I do think what you were saying about the voice too, I'm not going to name the book, but it was very popular and people called it a romance. But the story, the writing was written in such a way that I was like, I know it's supposed to be about a love story between two characters, but I'm not feeling any of that connection because it has that kind of literary detachment mm-hmm. that doesn't get me invested in the relationship. I was like, they're focusing so hard on like, how like being smart or looking literary that yeah. I'm like, I don't care about these two people. I don't care about their interaction with each other. I know they're going to fall in love, but I don't care. It's because of how you wrote it. And even though it's a well-respected book that had been converted into a TV show, I couldn't feel it because of that I felt like there is no passion. There is no longing. There's this weird detachment that maybe people say the craft of the writing is great, but I think the characters just suck. Like,
And I think for me, and this is 100% for me, mm-hmm. I think I would take I'll take giant plot holes I can drive a truck through and emotional connection over like a beautifully crafted, finely put together plot and no emotional connection. Like I'm here for the emotion. And that's generally true with pretty much everything, whether that's like what I'm writing or what I'm reading or what I'm watching on television. Like I'm here for like feeling that emotional connection mm-hmm. on some, whatever that is, even when I'm not like expecting romance. Although I find I'm very annoyed when there's no romance. thing. I'm like, what? No. Why? No.
Yeah,
I want them to love each other.
I know. I love it when because I still follow a lot of romance writers on Twitter, and a lot of the people will say in advance, it's a love story, but is it going to have a happy ending? Because I'm not even going to read it, or I'm not even going to watch the movie if I'm going to be disappointed at the end. Because mm-hmm. what's the point of me watching it? I'm okay with both. Some stories I'm like, definitely I want these characters to end up together at the end, and I want to see them have their happy ending.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, I'm okay with a poignant ending as well. And as far as the plot with a lot of emotion and no plot, I think I'm the opposite. And that's probably that's probably why I shifted more out of romance, is that I'm really into plots and twists and turns, but I have to have some emotional core, because I'm like, I want people to be, because some people, they will read my books and I'll read the reviews. They're like, oh my God, the plot was so crazy to the point that these characters were so stupid. But I want to read the next one because I want to see what happens to them. And I was like, that, because that's, you're emotionally invested in these characters. It had nothing to do with the plot. It was because you portrayed the characters and their relationships with each other in a way that it felt real. So you're rooting for them, or you want them to work, it's things to work out for them in the end, or you want to see a character who's been a jerk the whole time finally get their comeuppance. And I think you need that motivation, and that's the thing that keeps a lot of people reading, that they want to get emotionally invested in some shape or form.
Yeah, and having had her listen to you say all that, I think that's really true. I actually don't hate a noble sacrifice or a poignant ending when it makes sense. I don't like it when I feel like it's just to manipulate my feelings. Like, Rose could have scooted over on that door and let him get up there, and the only reason can be, like, throwing her freaking necklace off the boat in the end, you know? Like, that's you know what I mean? Like, it feels manipulative to me that he dies. Versus, like, I don't mind a noble sacrifice. I do cry like a baby, though, every single time. I'm easily manipulated, but, like, that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
But I don't mind that. I actually don't mind that. In a movie, I just don't seek it. Like, I don't seek it out, but when I find it and it's done well, I'm like, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. I don't hate it. But I mean, in the end, I really just want everyone to be happy.
Well, it, like I said, I think that's a lot of romance readers, romance writers, is to give that happy ending. And so I think there's definitely a place for it. And anytime people trash it, that I'm like, I think it serves a purpose, and the writers are good at what they do. And not everybody can do that. Not everybody can smoothly resolve a story at the end, so you feel that all the loose ends are tied up and it makes sense. And I was like, it's very hard to do that without it feeling rushed or contrived.
Yeah.
And so it's a skill set that you have to learn over time, so that too, readers don't feel cheated, that they're like, you did all this drama and now one thing happened and then everything's okay. Just everything's okay. And it's like, that's not easy to pull off and do it in a believable way.
And I think sometimes when, the hard thing that happens, and you kind of touched on it at the very beginning, is that so many times, because romance is a market that makes money, that sometimes publishers or authors, depending on, you know, whether they're independently published or whether they're traditionally published or something in between, will market a book as romance and then it's not. And so I think sometimes that kind of backlash against the concept of, like, oh, it doesn't have a happy ending is because, you know, it's been marketed as
absolutely.
And sometimes I think it's just that, like, especially now, it just feels like people are like, but everything's already hard, so I would like to just not be sad. But and so I think you're smart to, you know, to kind of push back against the label of, like, but this one isn't a romance, it has romantic elements. And I think if it's when things are properly labeled, people don't mind it as much because they don't necessarily have that same expectation, because it's so much to me, and I don't know if you agree with this, everything is about reader expectation. You know, I mean, that's why we have genres, is for to establish a reader expectation. Like, if I don't like thrillers, I want a thriller to be labeled, which I do, but if I want them to be labeled properly so that I can avoid a thriller, or if I'm seeking a thriller, I can find it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the same thing with you know, with subgenres or with, you know, whatever. It's like, it's, if we properly provide an expectation to our readers, then what we give, and then we fulfill that expectation, you know, then most of the time you're going to have happy readers, because most of those people are actually paying attention and actually know what, you know, are looking and going, oh, that's the kind of story that I want.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, too, if it was, if a book wasn't historical fiction, you wouldn't label it a historical fiction. But I think sometimes publishers, when they're trying to get something that's hot at the moment, and unfortunately that could be to the disservice to the author too, because yeah, you want your books to sell, but you don't want all these angry reviews because people are saying that's not what that was. Yeah. And I've suffered through that myself because of book packaging or presentation or previous books, and people get the impression the next one is going to be exactly like the first, because like I said, I started my career in romance, and then when my editor suggested I go more into women's fiction, I was one, kind of scared, because I'm like, I don't consider myself a women's fiction writer. I grew up reading romances, like my mom's romances, and two, I didn't know if it would alienate the existing audience, and then not to say that I had a big audience to begin with, but I wanted to make sure that I was, that's why I tried to include the romantic elements, because I didn't want to completely desert the crowd that I knew liked that romantic tension and like the couple seeing each other across the room in the first flirtation and then the angry separation and stuff like that. I knew that I didn't want to leave those people behind. But if I was going to go into something new, I knew I had to include those elements. One, because that's what I know. And two, I didn't want to leave the existing romance audience that I felt like I had already established myself with.
So, I mean, that leads to an interesting question. So, I mean, the earlier books were romances. What do you think was the, what was the catalyst for her coming, your editor? Her?
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm not misgendering.
No, it's okay.
What do you think was the catalyst? Was it that the style of the writing felt more, was starting to lean toward women's fiction, or she just kind of felt, you know, that, was there a specific idea that felt more women's fictiony? Was it, I mean, it sounds like it sort of came from her, and then that was something that you kind of gravitated toward.
Yeah. Well, it was a mix of things. Now it's very different now, because we're starting to see like a uptick among independents and even trade publishing. But at the time when I just started, which I said was around 2010, I think I submitted my manuscript in 2011, it was starting to be a lull in Black romance. Like, this is when they ended the Kamani line at Harlequin. It was when romance authors, like big ones, with the exception of like Beverly Jenkins and Brenda Jackson, were losing contracts with major publishing houses and going to smaller ones. And so they were like, and she told me, frankly, that it looks like the Black romance market, at least for now, is starting to die out. So we're going to try to shift you, because she said, because the first book series I did with Kensington and my editor was Mercedes Fernandez, she said, like, your stuff is kind of spicy, it's a little soap opera-y, why don't you lean more into that? And I'm like, I was like, and she's like, think Scandal, think How to Get Away with Murder, think The Have and the Have Nots, like, think of those along those lines and just run with it. And so when I thought about it, I was like, soap operas do have a heavy reliance on romantic relationships.
Yeah, for sure.
So it wasn't too much of a change. But when she's talked about kind of making it more of a soap opera and drama, I was thinking of all these interconnected storylines that often go with that. And I'm like, I don't know if I can pull that off, like having four or five different couples in one book and making it look like they're all connected to each other. So that's when we talked about it, and I came up with the idea, because I know many people have done it, about a wealthy family, because in a lot of romances based on this too, of having multiple brothers and sisters and having,
it's a great way to
exactly
to ground the series.
Exactly. And it works in an existing romance formula, because most of the time we would just do those relationships separately in mm-hmm. each book. But instead of doing that, I kept it all in the book together. And I also added things like an angry stepbrother who's out to get them, a cheating wife, and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, I can still keep the core of what I would normally do in a romance series, but try to interweave them together. And in addition to that, add subplots that wouldn't normally be featured big in a romance and make them right. bigger. So that's when I ended up with the Chesterton Scandal series, and that went on for like 4 books. And it had different couples, some married, some were just new relationships. One was a very familiar theme in romance, the playboy who gets his comeuppance and he's humbled and he falls for the kind of like plain Jane girl who grounds him and helps change him as a person. So it was a lot of familiar romance tropes, like the rich yeah. guy who falls for the poor girl. Like, people in romance would see this from a mile away. But if
yeah, it's somebody's catnip in romance
exactly,
right now.
Exactly. So they would see it, but if you were new to the romance drama, or if you weren't as familiar with it, you couldn't see it. So they were like, wow, it's really cool how these couples, and I'm like, yeah, I use lots of familiar tropes from romance and just put them all in one book. So
it must have been kind of exciting, though, not because obviously like the constraint, which is the good thing about romance, is that like that happily ever after, you know, mm-hmm. or happy for now ending. And that's awesome and I love it, but also there must have been something kind of freeing in a weird way about
yeah.
being like, but I don't have to make them all happy at the end of the book.
Exactly.
And I can make people miserable at the end of the book.
Well, and see, and that's the thing, is that the storylines continue to the point that it actually frustrated some readers, because they were like, I thought this was going to be resolved, and then you just kind of like left it as, well, are they happy?
Yeah.
Is it good just for now, or is this just a happily ever after? And so I got to, in the 4th book, to prove to people, I still remember how to wrap up a story and how mm-hmm. to wrap up a relationship at the end, that all the couples, by the end of the 4th series, were all together at the end. So they did get their happily ever after. It just took 4 books for them to get there.
So what kind of response did that get from readers? I mean, you're saying a little bit of some of them having a little bit of frustration, but having come from romance, I assume you had some crossover readers
yeah.
for them. I mean, was that because it seems, you know, when I think of like that soapy, like mm-hmm. I think of like Daniel Steele,
yeah,
and, like, you know, all that like 80s and 90s, like over the top, mm-hmm. Who Joan Collins' sister was writing them. I can't remember her first name, but like these like big, you know, like Jewel, and then it's
yeah.
like this family saga over
yeah.
50 years. And I don't feel like that. Now that I think about it, we don't see that all that often now, or maybe mm-hmm. I'm just reading the wrong things.
Oh, no. I felt the most of the readers actually responded pretty well. They were all frustrated by the ending. And actually, I would say that's a continuous theme that I've created. And it's a punishment for myself, because I have locked myself into these soap opera endings, to which readers are like, are you kidding me? I have to wait a year for another book. But I will say, I was like, as much as you guys complain, and I have read even reviews for my latest book, like bad reviews, I don't know about you. Some of them are so funny.
Oh my God, they're so funny.
But one was like, the writing was bad. The characters made no sense. It reminded me of 50 Shades of Grey. But dear God, I'm going to get the next book because I got to see what happens.
I love a backhanded compliment from you is the best thing in the world.
I was like, what?
This is mindless smut. I've read every book she's ever written.
Exactly. I was like,
okay, I don't know what to do or feel.
Exactly.
Right now, but I'm happy, I think.
I was like, forget you, but thank you for your purchase.
Thank you for your custom. I will take your money. I will collect your change.
So I'm like, I get reviews like that, that it's yeah. just people get so irritated and frustrated. I'm like, I don't think I'm a bad writer, but well, okay.
You think about like in the soap opera world, right? Yeah. I mean, like I mean, I watched soaps growing up. I've been an off and on soap watcher. I haven't watched a soap in a while, but I got real frustrated with Bold and the Beautiful, and I was like, I gotta go for a minute. I'm really mad right now. But so, you know, you think about the real challenge to those writers where it's like, they do so many episodes. I mean, they don't do episodes on the weekend, and they don't do generally have new episodes on like Christmas or, you know, Thanksgiving. So there's like maybe 6 or 7 days out of the year and the weekends that they don't have to write for. Mm-hmm. And so you have to this constant set of storylines and keeping yep. together like 30 or 50 characters.
Yep.
It's such a challenge. But, you know, I guess the comparison would be like on Friday when you hear the shot and you see that the character has been shot, and then that's the end of the you know, that's the end of Friday, and then you have to wait till Monday and the whole weekend. Yep. You're like, what? Is he dead?
Exactly. That's basically, yeah, what I did with the last book. Exactly. And I feel bad, but I will say, I was like, but those the books that I wrote that were like that sold better than the ones that I finished, the ones that yeah. I closed. Because like I said, you become invested in the story. It's like she says she hated the writing, she hated the characters, but I got to see what happens next. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with that, but keep doing it, I guess.
Yeah,
because you came back, did you not? So for me, it's like, yeah, you know, you're going to get guff every time you start a new series. And yeah. this one was particularly hard with like the Three Mrs. Greys because it was a mystery thriller. So people were like, yeah, she said who did it. But then she started all these new storylines. And one was like, well, where else can she even take it? And I'm like, oh, you highly underestimate me. I've been doing this.
50 ways to take
exactly, it. Exactly. I was like, don't worry. I can keep this story going. But yeah, it's to me like trying to juggle all the interweaving storylines, get people emotionally invested so they even care to yeah. read the next book is always the challenge. But the way I do it is basically from the skill set that I learned from writing romance yeah. first, is having that emotional core in the stories.
So what is your process when you start? And is that different with these sort of larger scale world, more multiple character kind of, you know, experience books versus when you were writing a more traditional two character romance?
Yeah, I will say two character romances for me is the easiest to write, and only because
well, now
because
you have 35 characters.
Exactly.
it's like dial it back, man. Well, that was easy.
Yeah, and because it, like I said, that's where I started. So to mm-hmm. me, that's like using, what did they say, like even if you like using old muscles. So
yeah, riding a bike, you
exactly
know how to
do it. So when I go back, I'm like, all right, I think I can knock this out in maybe 2 months.
Yeah.
So it's easy because I see the characters, I have an idea of where the beats should be in the story. Sometimes I'll do a summary. A lot of times for romances, I don't really have to because I like I said, I think I know where I'm going to go. With the more complex stories, I'll start off with a few chapters just to get to know the characters, like to introduce them. It's like, hey, who are you? What are you motivated by?
Do you need to kind of feel them move around
exactly.
in the world together and bump up against
exactly.
each other before you're comfortable?
Exactly. Because I think I may have an idea of who these people are, but until I start writing, I don't know if you've come upon it sometimes that you'll start writing and you think the story's going one way, and then it suddenly dawns like, no, the character would do this instead.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yes.
All the time. Like I will plot to a certain point and then I'll be like, I gotta stop here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a strategic writer, so I plot a little bit, I write to that, and then one day I turn the page and there's no more scenes written, so then I'm like, uh-oh, and then I have to plot a little bit more. But what that allows for is that discovery where, you know, I think, okay, these are enemies to lovers and they're gonna be real, real pissy with each other, and then I get them into the same room and the way that they bump against each other is something much more playful, and I'm like, oh, that's better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, and then I go in that direction. But I think there's so much to be said for having character discovery, and until I see them move against each other, I don't know for sure how it's going
to
work.
Yeah. Because there are some people who are like, they will outline from beginning to end before they even start.
Yeah, they're very structured.
Yeah, I was like, I've never been that writer. I have to write a few chapters of getting to know the people, getting to know the story, to see if it even works. And then I can start to, as you say, like plot it out a little bit more so that I have a working map to go for. Mm-hmm. But I know, too, that map could completely change. And I even tell my editor when I send her the, because they always make me send the synopsis first, this could change. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'll bring it to the end. Like I'm saying, the ending for the most part will be the same, but everything in between, that might shift around a little. And they're like, okay, well, I figure you'll pull it together. So
whatever. Do you fully pants in those first few chapters with just kind of that concept of, here, I know that these, you know, I like this idea for these characters, I like this idea for this kind of storyline, and now I'm just going to go, and then I'll start plotting once I kind of feel them out? Or do you do any kind of prep before you start that kind of testing process?
I think I fully pants at first. And for me, even sometimes, like one of the drafts of a book that I've been working on, the chapters that I started with, I was reading it again and I'm like, that doesn't work as first chapters. Mm-hmm. I'm introducing too much too early, but I realized I was writing it because I was just trying to get to know this character.
Yeah, you had to figure it out.
Exactly. But as for the reader, I might be dumping them into deep water too fast. So I'm like, you're going to have to pull back a little bit, write more to start the story, then slowly introduce them to all the depth and like messed upness of this character before they get there. You know it's there. You know it's waiting for them, but you don't want to slap them in the face with it. But, and I think as writers, over time, you learn that there are some chapters you're using to get to know. Some chapters you may even have to desert completely and say,
that's the worst, isn't
yeah,
it?
Exactly. It's like, it doesn't work.
Oh, but that was like,
exactly.
That was so many words.
I know. And you're like, but it doesn't work now.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. And so
I don't have to do that very often.
Yeah.
Because at a certain point, like, I think you know what your process is, and maybe I just don't count. I don't know. I realized some time ago that I'm actually pre-writing, and that's kind of what I'm doing. I'm sort of pantsing on a really like, almost no detail kind of level, and that's what I call plotting, because I'm just sitting there and I'm like, in this scene it's this person's point of view, and then this happens, and here's a little dialogue, and da, 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 da. And I had said that to someone, they're like, so you're pre-writing? And I'm like, no, I'm plotting. They're like, no, pre-writing. And I was like, I am pre-writing.
So, yeah,
like, you kind of pants and then
same.
Write and then plot.
Yeah, same. And I'll do that too, because I'm like, I will write maybe a 3-word chapter summary just so that I know, okay, this scene needs to go here, so that I don't waste my time writing a scene that doesn't work in that point of the book. Mm-hmm. So I've learned that over time.
Right, because when you get there, you're like, maybe this is what I want.
But exactly.
Sometimes when you get there, you're like, oh,
that doesn't work. It doesn't work. Yeah, it's like, it knocks off the pacing, or why would you introduce this early, or this needs to be shifted earlier in the book. So usually I try to do that. After I do the first couple of chapters, I'll say like, okay, I think I know everybody by now. And let me start doing just little chapter summaries and say, okay, then this has to happen, this has to happen. And two, sometimes I'm just so excited to write a scene.
Do you do that?
Then you're like, I don't even want to wait till I get to that point. I'm just going to write the scene, and then I'll come back later and see if
I'll find that pre-writing is like, it'll be like 3 pages of plotting, quote unquote, which is the point where I was like, oh wait, you're right. That may not be actually plotting, that may be rewriting.
Yeah,
because it's really fun when you anytime you reach a scene that you're like, oh my god, I've been waiting for this.
Yeah,
I've been waiting. And it's fun too when, because sometimes I get to that point and I can't make it fit like how great it was in my head, and that's frustrating. And sometimes I reach it and it's just like whoosh, like coming down the side of a mountain after you've climbed, you know. It's just like you just slide in, it's like a golden, you know, 3500 words or whatever. You're like, yay, free words. But it's always super fun, or when I get to a point where I've been like building. Do you find that with when you're doing a series that's interconnected, like you're talking about, whether that is a, you know, 2-person romance, but you're doing 3 different books about the 3 brothers or whatever.
Yeah.
Or you're doing what you're describing, which is you know, multiple characters building throughout, you know, three or four books to an ultimate end. Mm-hmm. That when you, because what it's inevitable that you in book one maybe, you know, kind of start laying the groundwork for something.
Yes.
That's going to pay out either in the third couple's book. Mm-hmm. Or the fourth book,
right? Yeah.
And so, I mean, sometimes by the time I get there now, it's like, it's so like exciting in my head that I'm like, yay.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so excited for this couple, or I'm so excited to write this scene that I've been just built like hinting at for two books.
Exactly. Now I love it too for readers, because some of them I will see them say like, that scene was completely random. I don't even understand why they happened to the character. And I was like, but wait.
There's
read book two and you will understand why I introduced it at that point. And I think too, it's like, I don't know, sometimes I kind of feel like too, if you write romance or you write women's fiction, your ability as a storyteller is kind of underestimated. People think you're just there for titillation. Yeah. And you're like, no, actually I really am considering the trajectory of the story and the pacing. Yeah. And the character development and the motivation of, so the characters don't just seem like they're doing things completely at random.
The theme. And exactly. I mean, like the theme is, of course, for romance, like love conquers all. That's,
yeah.
That's like, a, you know, love overcomes, whatever, you know, whatever. I mean, all of us are sort of telling that story.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, we do deal with issues that are deeper than that. I mean, yeah. We often write stories about really difficult subjects. And so it's like, I never want to short shift that. And again, I mean, like you said, it's like we're really paying attention here.
Yeah.
We really are.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody, as I'm a fast writer, so somebody once said, oh, you know, you love to churn them out. And I'm like, if you understood the amount of work that goes into this churn.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm like, and to really, and to even to go into the process that once, and some people are like, when they have already published, they're very self-conscious of how it's going to be read. And for yeah. me, the only way I can get over that is completely forgetting that mm-hmm. people are going to read it. Because I'm like, I would get complete stage fright and wouldn't be able to write another word if I was considering constantly, people are going to think this. People are going to say this. Do you really want to do that? So to me, you have to completely dedicate yourself to the process and to the story and just hope. That everything,
well, the story is yours.
Yeah, exactly.
Until you let it go, and then at that yeah. point, I feel like it's none of my business anymore. Like
yeah.
now, it doesn't belong to me. I let it go. I moved on to the next thing.
Yeah,
and so I can't worry too much, you know, unless someone is pointing out that I've done something problematic or damaging. That's
yeah.
a little bit different. But like, if you're just talking about like, I didn't like this story, or I thought these two should have ended up together, or I didn't like the way you worded this sentence. Like, I can't care about that because,
yeah.
you know, I because you'd have. 1,000 voices in your head, and I can't produce that way.
Exactly. And so for me, I'm like, there's a book out there for everybody.
Yep.
I don't assume that what I write will appeal to every person, and it's
no.
not my job to appeal to every person. So if a person says that, I prefer when people say, I didn't like it, but you know, maybe it's just not my cup of tea. And I will say
yeah.
that even about books that people love, that I'm like, I didn't get it, but you know
mm-hmm.
what, I'm sure there's an audience out there for it. There's always is. There
yeah.
are people who will really appreciate it. And that's mm-hmm. what's ultimately what's important. So, yeah.
I don't want someone to waste their time on a book of mine if they're not into it. Like, I actually love, so I write super sexy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you get this a little bit too, where it's like, ew, you know, it's just sex, blah. And I always love those, because anytime I say, oh my God, this is some, the last book was like just a porn fest or something like that. And I posted that on Twitter, and I swear the sales for that book just rocketing. People are like, a porn fest, you say,
yay.
One click. That's one click for me. But what I love about that kind of review, and it doesn't have to just be about the sexual content, but any kind of content,
mm-hmm.
is that I want people that want, it's not a porn fest, but like they want something.
They want that sexy. Sexual. Yeah, they want that sexual content.
They want that sexiness
yeah.
as part of the story. Are going to be like, oh, exciting. I'm
yeah.
going to one click that. But the people that are like, oh, no, that's not really my cup of tea, aren't going to waste their time and money. Like, those are limited resources, both of those things. So I would very much rather someone just not buy my book.
Yeah.
Because it's not for them, and go find someone that's for them and not waste their time.
Agreed.
Because, I mean, most people have a limited budget every month for those kinds of pleasures. And I don't want, you know, my book to be to keep them from finding some other book that they like, you know? So, I mean, I sort of like it. It's just, you know, it's the same reason we put trigger warnings. Like, I don't want to hurt anyone, and I want someone to be able to make an informed decision about what they're purchasing.
Yeah. So, no, I completely agree.
And I'm not going to necessarily not tell a story that I want to tell if it's my story that to tell. But I also don't want someone to stumble onto something that they just don't like or that is actually damaging.
Yeah, and that's what it was like. My point of my story isn't to disgust you or offend you. Why would I go out of my way to do that? So if it's not your thing, don't pursue it.
Yeah, go on to the next one. That's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
You can even say you hate it. I don't care.
Exactly.
Sometimes I care. There's times, man, when those one stars will just hit you right in the face.
Well, and that's...
Which is why I don't look very often. Sometimes you just have to. You see it, like, it's out of the corner of your eye, and you're like,
I know.
Oh, no, I'm the worst.
I know. And you're just like, why am I writing?
Why am I the worst? Exactly. It's how can I not know how to do this?
Exactly. Exactly. And then you're like, I'd say that to my husband, and he's like, why do you even read those things?
You know, my husband's the same way.
And I was like, I don't know. And I will say it too, as a writer, that I will remember the bad reviews a lot more than the good ones. And
100%.
That's what frustrates me the most. Because I was like, you will see all this stuff of people saying, I loved your book. I thought it was great. Will you talk to our book club? And then you see that rum review was like, this sucked. And I don't understand why people are investing money in this. You're like, that's the one.
That's the one. That
you remember.
That's my jam.
Yeah. So
it's really true.
Yeah. It's like, I need to stop reading them too. I need to stay away from good reads. I don't know why.
Yeah. I don't tend to be over there. My problem is because I'm an indie. You know, the NetGalley is something that I clear my own NetGalley. And so what happens is that the emails when someone reviews on NetGalley come to
me.
And so it's like, it just is in the inbox. And I try to just kind of like file them, mostly because it's like, if someone, you know, just consistently hates me, I might just go like, maybe this isn't for you.
Yeah, I know. Like, why do you keep coming back?
Or if they're just like, if the review, I don't know, like everyone, there's not very many times that I don't, you know, clear somebody. It's not really very often for any personal reason, but like also like just to see who actually reviewed it. Cause sometimes people ask for it and they get it 5 times. They've never reviewed it ever. And I'm like, well then I don't know. I can't keep giving you free books. This isn't a free book club. This is like, you're supposed, you know, I mean, in this case, like in NetGalley, I kind of expect if you're taking it, you're kind of, you know, saying you're going to review it within a somewhat reasonable amount of time. I'm not expecting it to be right off the bat, but like it does, you know, in the next 6 months, if you haven't reviewed it, I don't know what to say.
Yeah. No, I
so
agree.
I keep them for that. And so I'm sitting there and I'm looking and I'm like, oh God, why did I open it? And I know that I can just highlight them and just dump them into the stupid file and not look at them, but I still look at them because I can't help it. Like, we love our negativity bias. Like, you know, I think I suck secretly. And so when someone says out loud, you suck, I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank
exactly.
you for that.
Exactly. And even though in your heart, you're like, you know, you don't suck. You know you don't suck. But just hearing it, it's like, I don't know. Maybe maybe it is that bad. Maybe
I am terrible. I am a bad person.
Exactly.
Somehow.
Exactly.
So but, I have to ask you, since you're kind of a discovery writer, do you edit then as you go along, or do you just kind of like vomit out that discovery and then come back and sort of, you know, repair like paths that you reformed, or, you know, is that something that you do along the way, or is it something that you come back to after?
I do it so many times along the way that it's annoying. Like, people will talk about, this was my first draft, this was my second draft. I'm like, I don't even know. This could be my 1,000th draft, because I will write it and then like write a few pages and like, okay, let me reread it just to make sure the flow is well. Okay, I feel comfortable with that. Let me move on. And I'm that type of person. And people say, they were like, wouldn't that take longer? But for me, I feel like it actually goes faster because I'm doing it as I'm going. So by the time I hit the end, I'm just doing mostly line edits and looking for major, like, oh, that doesn't make sense right there.
Yeah, you turn in a much more clean copy.
Exactly. as opposed to going getting all the way to the end and then seeing like, oh my god, that's a major plot hole. I can't believe I didn't
see that.
With
such a complicated group of stories, I would think that you kind of would have
yeah.
to be on top of it all the time.
Yeah.
It would be a lot harder to fix.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, this is now threaded into six different
exactly.
stories.
Exactly.
So,
great. Yeah. And I often, too, I was like, because the storylines and other books are interweaved in, you have to figure out, like, where do I start dropping nuggets for
yeah.
other storylines within this chapter. I have to write it so that it makes sense when I transition to the other parts that, okay, these two characters are connected and this is why they're connected, because you mentioned this character in the previous chapter. Mm-hmm. So I have to do that as I'm going to make sure that interplay is happening along the way.
Do you think that you have an easier time with that just because you have a background as an editor? Do you bring, obviously you're bringing that into mm-hmm. the writing process, the editorial process?
I think, yeah, in some ways I would say because I am as an editor, and even though people may not think this, also because I worked in a newsroom kind of teaches you, because a newsroom usually they have lots of things going on. You have other reporters who are doing phone calls. You have editors shouting to people that they need something at a certain time, or did you do this thing that you said? Or you have people who are coming in, coming out. And so you really learn this intense focus of how to shut everything down and mm-hmm. just focus on the story in front of you, because you know you don't have a lot of time to work on it and you can't get easily distracted. So for me, all of those interplays, it helps because I've already learned how to block out everything around me and just focus on the words and the text. And having like 2 years as a reporter really helped doing that.
Yeah, I've interviewed a few reporters on the podcast, and that seems to be kind of a consistent, like, that ability to juggle and also to
yeah.
intensely focus, because you just, there's no other choice.
Exactly. And so
because it's like so many squirrels all the time, so you have to be able to mm-hmm. say, I'm only going to look at this squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
These other squirrels are not my problem.
Exactly. just shut everything out, focus on this, and make sure the words make sense and
yeah.
move on. So yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
So what was your journey to publication? You started out at Defina, is that right? Which is a division of Kensington.
Well, my journey actually began when I was 19. And I tell the story of BET Books, that is now defunct. And it was funny mm-hmm. because BET Books then became Arabesque. Arabesque
yeah.
was eventually absorbed into Kensington. And Kensington eventually formed Defina.
Yeah.
So I started at BET Books in college when they had a first-time writers contest. Because, like I said, I had been reading my mom's romance novels. And so, of course, a lot of romance readers be like, oh, I think I want to try to write my own love stories.
Right.
And because my mom was a romance fan, I let her read my early stuff.
Mm.
And she's like, you know what? You're really good. Like, some of your stuff is as good as the books. And I'm like, you think so? And so when she told me about the first time writers contest, I'm like, I'm not going to win, Mom. What is the point? And she's like, I think you have a chance, but if you don't want to do it, it's not a big deal. So I finally decided, after thinking about it, like maybe a month before the due date, to just crank out a story. And I turned in and had it FedExed overnight to make the deadline for the contest. And I didn't win, but I was one of the finalists.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
she was right.
Yeah. I was completely shocked. And my mom was like, I'm always right.
Man, mom.
Exactly. So that I got a romance short story published, and then they offered me to participate in another anthology. But by then I was in college. So I was
yeah.
like, I'm 19. I'll just come back to this when I have more time.
Oh my gosh, do you look back and be like, the
opportunity? Exactly.
Hello.
Because
excuse me, ma'am, what are you doing?
Exactly. That period of time, it would have been amazing to have a career, because like I said, Black romance was doing really good at that time. So I just, being 19 and dumb, was like, I'll just come back. I have to work on my classes and do my extracurriculars and stuff. So needless to say that when I graduated college and I wanted to get an agent and get a publisher, it was not that easy.
Right. The market had shifted.
Exactly. The market has shifted. It was more competitive. So for me, I was kind of got rejection after rejection after rejection. And then finally, I got a two book contract through Genesis Press.
I remember Genesis.
Yeah. And I was really excited. And then it folded.
Oh my God.
I know. And I was like,
that old chestnut. Like,
I know.
And then it went away.
Exactly.
And then the editor died.
Exactly.
Then, oh my God, those are the worst stories.
Like, I know.
Yay. Oh, nope.
But it's very common in romance.
Oh,
though.
It's so common.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of turnover.
Exactly. So it folded. And then I started submitting again. And I submitted to my then editor, Mercedes. And actually, she did not respond to my first submission.
Oh, like at all?
Nope.
Oh.
I know.
I hate that when it goes into the ether and you're like,
exactly.
Am I a real person?
Exactly. It's like, can I get a response to say you got
say
it?
No. Just a rubber stamp no is fine.
Nothing? Okay. And so I was, and then I wrote another one and I'm like, okay, I have no pride. I'll just submit again. Maybe this one will have a better chance. And she waited a year to respond. To the point.
Publishing.
Exactly. And I was like, and she said, hey, so I think this would be great, but it would be better as a series. Do you have a second book to go with this? And I was like, yes, I do. I had no book. I had nothing.
Oh, nice.
I had nothing. So I wrote probably in 2 weeks, 40,000 words.
Wow.
I just cranked it. And that was the first series for the Gibbons Gold Digger series in romance. Because I was like, I'm not going to lose this. I am not going to lose this opportunity. I'm getting this done. So that was, I've been with Kensington since then. I got my first contract with them in 2011. And so it's been about 10 years.
And you're with the same editor still?
No, Mercedes left the business. She left the business, and now she's like a stay-at-home mommy in upstate New York.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. Lots of editor turnover.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, no. But I was grateful to her for the opportunity. And even when I was like, yeah, you didn't respond for a year, so I thought you just were going to, like, ghost me again. And she's like, yeah, well, you know, publishing.
So true.
We're busy. And I'm like, for a year? Okay. But
I feel like they kind of have a little less space for that now, though, because that indie option is there.
Well, that's true. That's true. And
I know you did the McLean Girls.
Yeah. I did indie. That because Kensington was like, I don't know. I don't really see this for us. And actually, we submitted it to other publishers. And other publishers were like, we're going to do it, but we're going to do it digital only. And I was like, if you're going to do it digital only, then why wouldn't
I?
Yeah. I was like, then I could self-publish it because I don't really see what opportunities I would get if you just decided to go digital.
That always frustrates me when, like, it's like, if you're going to do a thing, then you're going to have to tell me what the thought process is of, like, how that's going. How is that going to benefit me?
Exactly.
Are you just, because if you're just throwing spaghetti against a wall, I'm not really interested in participating in that. Like, I can do that on my own and make more money.
Well, exactly. And my worry was too, that I was like, because I think a lot of people with the McLean Girl series, a lot of people like the covers. They like the pack.
Such great covers.
Yeah. And that was something I crafted myself. And I was like, I wouldn't. When you're working with a trade publisher, even though they can get you lots of opportunities, those are one of the things you can't control. You can give input and you hope for the best with covers, marketing, but you know a lot of that is out of your hands. That's basically going to be whatever committees or departments are working on within there. So when they offered like to just do digital, I'm like, if that's the case, I would much rather control the package from beginning to end than hand over all of that just for a couple thousand dollars.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
and not necessarily building anything more.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're not necessarily building some. It's not adding the bricks to your path versus, you know, doing it independently. You can use it to be a draw for people or
exactly.
You know, you can manipulate the way that you produce the product or the way that you're promoting the product at any time. And you can see exactly what that, you know, what that change that you're making does. Exactly. Did you enjoy that process of being in control completely?
Well, some of it was scary. Because you're like, you're taking control over the editorial, you're taking control over the formatting, you're taking control over the covers, you're taking control over the marketing. And that was a lot of stuff that I handed off to other people before then. Yeah. And also, I would say, even though there's some overlap, there are very distinct audiences for indie versus trade. And a lot of the trade readers I got was from being in Target and being in Walmart. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to reach those people for the most part because I was going to be digital. And so I was scared.
Even if you produce the paperbacks, they're not going to have that broader distribution.
Exactly. Yeah. They're not going to have that broader distribution and visibility. And so I knew I was taking a chance in doing it, but I was just like, I really want to tell this story. And the other thing too is that when you're in trade, just because you write the stories doesn't mean they get published. I wanted a chance for all three McLean girls to have their stories. If I assigned it over to a traditional publisher, they may have said, okay, we'll do two with an option for the third. Mm-hmm. And so that's other stuff that you consider. It's to me, it's the plus and minuses of independent publishing. Independent publishing, you control all that stuff in the beginning. You control the rollout. You control the publishing dates. You control how many books are going to be in the series from beginning to end. But in trade, sometimes that can give you access to some audiences that is a little bit harder, unless you're like a big indie, that people already, you have that core audience. It's a little bit harder to reach more people, especially because too KDP is flooded. It's so hard. Yeah, it's
and now so I mean with people. KU, like they're prioritizing, you know, visibility as well, and mm-hmm. you know, with the advertising that they do and stuff, it is definitely way more competitive. They've definitely changed things a lot in the last year. I mean, I was traditionally published from 2005 until 2011, and then I was with Sam Hain from 2011 to 2014, and then in 2015 I went fully indie. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of done the whole wave. and I mean, it's so different now even than it was in 2015, and it was so different in 2015 from what it was in 2009 and 2010 when everything kind of launched and it was just like people drowning in money sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
that the visibility and the findability is a whole different thing.
Yeah,
so it's a different challenge now.
Yeah, and learning how to do that and
it's a moving target.
Exactly.
You're like, okay, I figured it out. Oh nope, it's over there now.
Exactly.
Hang on, I gotta figure it out.
Exactly.
So it's definitely a challenge for sure.
Yeah, and I knew.
Do you think that you would do it again? I mean, you're obviously writing a very different kind of story now, mm-hmm. and that story may also not have, because romance has such a big indie market, but mm-hmm. I know some genres don't have a giant indie market.
Yeah. No, I think if I was happy with it, I mean, the sales weren't crazy, but it was something I was proud to produce. And I felt like it was a story that needed to be told, mm-hmm. at least from my perspective. I was really passionate about these three characters and their love stories. I was excited to write it. And also, it gave me a little bit more control over my own publishing schedule, because of trade publishing, sometimes your books can disappear from the shelf or your name isn't going to be on the shelf for a year or a year and a half.
Right.
And so you're hoping that audiences remember you, but you can't really be assured of that. But that's why I was like, if I did digital at the same time, I could make sure that the people who liked me, if they went to Amazon or if they went to websites, they could at least find something that I had.
Yeah, you're
produced.
Beating the algorithm a little
exactly.
bit.
Exactly. I'm not disappearing into the abyss every year and hoping that I can float back to the top all over again. Or not even to the top. I was like, to the middle.
I like to float to the middle.
Exactly. I don't want to disappear completely. It would be nice. Yeah, I was hoping that would help.
The readership has a complete understanding of that, nor should they, because it's really, it's an internal, you know, like clock mechanism that we all deal with. That, you know, of just how hard it is to, like, oh, I wish you would write faster. And it does not matter how fast you write.
Yeah.
Like, I put out a book every 2 months on a...
Which
almost,
is
almost consistently all
amazing.
The time. And somebody the other day was like, why can't you write faster? I'm like, because I'll die.
Yeah.
This is it. Like, yeah. This is my top. Like, please don't yell anymore.
I know.
And it's such a stress. And it's, I mean, it doesn't matter if you write a book every 18 months, if you write a book every 2 months, like, they, like, there's readers that just don't care. Like, they just want to see a, like, constant, never ending, you know, pour of water output. And so it is. I mean, you know, they don't think they recognize, like, all the mechanisms that go into producing a book, all the mechanisms that go into writing a book,
mm-hmm.
and then all the mechanisms that go in for them finding that book.
Yeah.
Again, it's not their job to know those things. But I mean, it's I don't know that they really understand, like, how it's such a hard business. It's such an amazing, great, wonderful business. And mm-hmm. it's such a hard business all at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, like, part of it is, like, you love, what I love the most is being creative, to the ability mm-hmm. to think, to tell the younger self that you will be able to have people read your work, and you yeah. were that was your dream, is that you would read stories and just absolutely fall in love with characters, or there were, like, things in your childhood that books that you just that epitomize your childhood and you will never forget. And for you to say, like, one day I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to go to a bookshelf and point to a book and say, I wrote that. Or see people say, like, I really enjoyed your story. That's an amazing thing to do. It's not something I realistically thought I would be able to do. But
no.
then yeah. there is the reality of commerce and
mm-hmm.
and competitiveness. And even though they tell you that you shouldn't look at other people's paper, focus on yourself, that you're
so
all
hard not to,
exactly,
because sometimes you're like, her paper sucks,
exactly exactly,
like, oh my god, I'm so petty,
exactly,
I'm such a petty person.
It's like,
I'm
why exactly, it's like, why is that doing good, why did they promote that one?
When it frustrates me the most is when it's someone that I've met and they're like a shitty human being. And that doesn't happen very often, but sometimes I'm like, but that person's a jerk.
And you're like, it doesn't even matter. And so
there's no meritocracy in publishing.
I'm new. So
it's, I mean, and that doesn't mean that people that do very well don't have merit. But I mean, that's like the, like, floating to the top very often has almost nothing to do with meritocracy.
And I say that all the time, is that people, they will make assessments, especially, and they'll do it with romance, and they'll do it with indies, and say that, well, maybe the person isn't successful because they're not a good writer. That has nothing to do with
it. Zero.
Yep. It has nothing to do with it. You think that every book on the bestseller is good writing?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. And I was like, and that's not to trash people necessarily. Because,
no.
Like I said, it doesn't matter whether it's good or bad, as long as there's an audience that really appreciates it and embraces
exactly.
it. That's what matters. But to discount a person's ability and say, oh, they're not with a trade, or they don't have an agent because obviously they're a bad writer. It's like, no, that has nothing to do with anything. Or they're not a bestseller.
And I feel like that has somewhat changed. I mean, there's still people that have that attitude, but I do feel like it's a lot less, because there are so many people that are doing so well in indie that, and, you know, and clearly have stories that have merit, and so I think that it's becoming more of an even footing. But I mean, the way that it gets promoted is, I mean, you know, you sit there and you're like, here's the best books of 2021, and I will guarantee you probably maybe there'll be one indie on there, and it'll
exactly.
be an indie that performed extremely well, and not, you know, so it's like, it's always a little frustrating as an indie for that, and I'm sure you experience that as well, where it's like, how come the book that I wrote that like, this book is equal to this book as far as the writing, as far as I'm concerned, like, why did this one get, like, this one got all this buzz that was but the buzz is generated in some way by the publishers, like, helping to generate
exactly.
that buzz,
exactly,
you know, promoting to generate that buzz, and it's something that is less accessible as an indie, unless you want to bend over backward.
It's the same writer
anymore. Yeah, same writer.
It's the same writer, nothing changed. And I think we know it as writers, but I'm gonna be honest, there are some indie writers that were successful, but if you talk to readers, they didn't know they were indies.
Yeah, that's true. No, I get that all the time. People are like, can you tell Avon to do blah, blah, blah? And I'm like,
I don't
know Avon for 10 years.
Yeah. And so we know it. We know that it has nothing to do with it, that you can still produce a product. You can even still get in stores as an indie, but for them, they don't get the connection that this person did it without the major backing of a corporation.
Yeah. And in some ways, like, you kind of feel like that's a win as an indie, because it's like, okay, so I have produced a product that looks and feels as good or better as the product that was being produced for me when I was making a lot less money per box.
Exactly.
So if people haven't realized, like, sometimes people are like, I wish, because our company name is the Passionate Pen LLC. Mm-hmm. I wish the Passionate Pen LLC, you know, had cleared my, you know, had said yes to my NetGalley. And I'm like, yeah, it's all me, babe. It's still all me. Although I do sometimes just punt to the LLCs and I'm like, oh yeah, I know. Sometimes, you know, because I don't want to get yelled at. I don't like getting yelled at. But like, you know what I mean? I mean, like, they don't necessarily know that that isn't a thing that just doesn't produce me. That it's just, you know, I mean, we make enough money that the LLC makes sense for tax purposes. That's literally the only reason that there's an LLC. So, you know what I mean? I mean, like, that we have created a business because it is a business and it is a moderately sized business. But it's still just me. So, you know what I mean? I mean, it's...
They can't tell the difference.
Again, like, you produce something that looks and feels to them to be the same thing, then I guess I've won a prize because, you know, I mean, they don't care. Because honestly, they don't care. They don't care where it comes from.
Yeah. No, and I mean, and I agree with that. It's just when I was at work one day, and it was one of the staffers, we were reading a story for someone who had self-published a book. And my coworker said, well, it can't be that great if we had to self-publish it.
Right.
And so that's why I'm like, even though you know, more people should know that actually there are a lot of independents that blur the lines and you can't tell. Mm-hmm. You can't tell the difference. It's not going to be a difference of quality. And frankly, there are some trade books that you could be kind of surprised that made it past the finish line that managed to get published. It's no indication of quality one way or the other if you're indie or your trade. I'm one of the first people to say that. I was like, though I've mostly published in trade, I would never discount people who independently publish, because I know that it's not an indication of talent. There could be any number of reasons why they decided to go independent. It's a choice that each author has to make.
Yeah, and I think being more and more informed about that, because there's people that they don't want to control every single aspect, and or they want to have full distribution into every single store.
Yeah.
And so that traditional, you know, choice is really good for them. And there's people that want to have control of everything. Or like, you know, I mean, I always laugh when people are like, well, you know, how good can you be? I'm like, you wouldn't take, literally, I make 10 times more money a year than I made with Avon. So like, why wouldn't, if you were sitting there, you guy who thinks that indie public, and you were told you could do this thing and you could make this much money, or you could do the same thing, do it slightly differently and make this much money, you're telling me that you wouldn't take the second option.
Yeah, just for the prestige of saying that you have a contract.
But again, I mean, I also think my experience is very different because I did have, you know, people that, don't you miss seeing in bookstores? I'm like, I saw all my books in bookstores. Like, I had that feel. I had that experience and it was amazing. It was so fun.
Yeah.
But like now, you know, I don't feel like I miss it the same way that I think sometimes when people have started out as indie and that's all they've ever been, like that, they want that experience. And there's not, again, that's a high value experience. And I don't think there's anything wrong with making career decisions. But I do love that people seem to be more and more informed. And I think, you know, people talking about what they do and how they do it is a good reason why.
Yeah, because I think, didn't Andy Weir in science fiction, I think he started as an indie, didn't he?
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. The guy who wrote The Martian.
The Martian was an independent book.
Exactly.
And then it got picked up and distributed by, I want to guess, Simon & Schuster, because that's always who I guess. pick up and distribute literally anything, which is a whole other conversation, so... Racist book. Simon & Schuster's your man. also, books about Mars. Leaving Matt Damon there, which honestly, I'm not sure why we went back for Matt Damon. I just want to say, if it had been Sebastian Stan, I would have been back there in a second. But I'm not sure I would go back for Matt Damon. So.
But
I mean, he was fully independent.
Yeah.
And then because the book was such a wild success, it was picked up and distributed by, because they just couldn't, like, you needed that machine for how big it was going to end up becoming.
Yeah.
When it became a movie.
Yeah.
A massive movie.
It's
a good movie, too.
Yeah. I just saw in the Hollywood Reporter that they optioned, it wasn't even a book. It was a string story that was on Reddit.
Oh my God, what world we live in.
Yeah, it was a thriller that somebody just kept posting updated chapters, which we're like, we all know what that concept is. It's not new. But they were posting it to Reddit, and it was people were so invested in the story, Hollywood picked up on it, and they're already booked. Right, it's like it wasn't even published anywhere. This was just this random.
Well, I guess it will
be now. Exactly. So I'm like, it is definitely, it's definitely not a reflection of quality.
I kind of have to pick. I have to really respect that hustle. By the way,
I was amazed. I was like,
damn,
Reddit,
good for you. Good
Reddit?
For you, Reddit guy.
I was like, wow. And they said, yeah, it was a Hollywood frenzy to buy it. I was like, a story on Reddit?
That's fun.
Yeah.
I'm both, like, kind of depressed and also really impressed by that, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. I don't even try to understand it. I don't. No. A lot of stuff I don't get when it comes to publishing. I don't get it.
No.
The books that spark a wildfire, the ones that just sit that I thought, it was like, that was a really great book. I don't understand why I didn't get more attention. I was like, I don't even try to figure it out.
Sometimes it really does feel like throwing spaghetti at a wall. I assume sometimes that's what they do. They're like, okay, we're going to make a paper airplane with every single one of these books on each one, and then we're going to throw it, and whichever one goes the furthest is the one we'll promote. Are you ready with your airplane, everybody?
Exactly. And then they're like, it was a success. It's like, it was a success. Yeah, because you put a $1 million marketing campaign behind it. Shocking. It better be a success.
You promoted it to every major trade, like, exactly. Oh no, you know, and then, you know, the opposite end of that is it didn't do well, so you must not be very good at what you do. And it's like, well, you didn't promote it.
Exactly. And that's the other.
So why, like.
Exactly. The manifest destiny of, like, just crappy investment is like, well, we didn't promote it. We didn't tell anybody about it. We didn't really put it in any campaigns, and it didn't sell. Well, we're not going to go with your option.
Yeah. And it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a wild industry. And I can't say I'm like, I don't love it all the time, but I love it. I love the creation part. Like you said, the creation part is so perfect. It's worth the rest of it.
Yeah, no, totally. And like I said, I'm in trade and I'm still talking trash because I was like, when I see it, I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get it. But okay, thanks for being. I'm glad I'm here. I don't get any of this.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time. This hour's flown by. Do you want to tell everybody what your next book is, what your most latest book was, and what they can order, whatever you want to tell them about?
Sure. The latest book that I have is The Three Mrs. Greys, and it's a domestic thriller. A domestic thriller with a soapy storyline. So it's about three women who discover they're married to the same man when they all arrive at the hospital after he's been shot. So the story then proceeds to, they try to unravel who shot him and also unravel his many secrets and learn more about the man they're married to. The next book will be the follow-up to that book. It's called Truth Lies in Mr. Grey. So the first book establishes who shot him. The second book explains the why, and it also continues some storylines of the three wives.
I love that. That's such a great idea.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again for coming.
Well, thank you. I had fun.
This has been Journeys of Romance. I'm Jess Michaels, your host. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next time.